Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Side of Genocide. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from New Zealand, the island changed nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy, according to the Prime Minister John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest today comes to us from the mystical realm of Wall Street. His name's Tom Filer, affiliate, associate, something otheriate of Lindsay Williams. So, Tom, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Vinny. It's always a privilege and an honor to appear on your show and to have an opportunity to speak with your audience and with you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I've been better. I'm in a little bit of a financial crisis myself lately. My PayPal cut me off from all my subscribers, so I'm busy trying to encourage people to resubscribe for a couple of bucks a month so I, you know, can go back to surviving.
Amen. Well, your show is something that, you know, brings forth information and topics that, people don't get anywhere else. So as I did, I think, on the last show, I would encourage everybody to support your show. Not only as listeners, but also financially as well. It's very important to keep media like yours, with an ability to, get information out that the people aren't going to hear anywhere else.
Now, speaking of information that you're not going to hear anywhere else, have you got an agenda for us today to help people with their own personal financial struggles?
Yes, I appreciate an opportunity to come and talk to your audience. I think a lot of your audience members, of course, may be concerned about what recently happened with gold. On a historical basis, gold dropped dramatically about a week ago, Friday and Monday. And so we've gotten a lot of calls to our company trying to find out what happened. Why did gold drop so historically in such a very short period of time? They're wondering whether or not it represents a change in the what's called the macroeconomic situation out there in the world. Was there some change in the fundamentals of the U.S. or the global economy, which might have caused gold to go down? What should their reaction be to the drop in gold? People have also asked us, were there institutions that were involved in the drop of gold that, either influenced it substantially or maybe helped to create the drop in gold? And so I think it's wonderful that you're offering your audience an opportunity to spend a couple hours talking about some of these questions and how people should kind of take a look at precious metals and gold going forward.
Yeah, indeed. And we now have the caller line open, ladies and gentlemen. So if you want some financial advice from an expert, here's your opportunity right here, right now with Tom Filer. The phone number is 1-218-339-8525. That's an international call-in number. So it's 1-218-339-8525, or just calling in the United States, just take off the 1. So it's just 218-339-8525. Now, interestingly enough, Tom, I was asked by somebody, I cannot figure out who or remember who exactly it was asking me why the gold price dropped. And I said, I have no idea. Hopefully I'll get the opportunity to talk to an expert about it, and here you are. So would you be able to give us your take on why the gold dropped so sharply?
Sure. Absolutely. Vinny, provide a disclaimer to the audience and let them know and alert them that, we're going to be talking a lot about investments, about gold, and we're going to be, providing some information, some supposition, some sentiment. So we're going to be talking about a lot of things, and I need to encourage the audience to receive this as information, and to always be careful whether you hear something on a show like yours, or whether your audience hears something on a cable business show, or reads something in a financial newspaper. To take that as information only, and before making any investment decisions, to be sure to consult with a professional, and in the best case circumstance, a professional who is of like mind with you. One thing the audience has to remember is some things are going to be said, and for some people, some investment ideas may be appropriate, and for other people, the same investment idea may not be appropriate for them, because everybody has different financial circumstances, objectives. Everybody has a different financial lifestyle, so they need to understand that. That no matter where they hear something about an asset or a prospective investment, that they make sure they get professional counsel, on that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair warning. Goes for everybody as well.
Absolutely. Why did gold drop? I'd like to, maybe begin this segment with, giving a perspective, kind of broad perspective on some of the issues that. That we need to kind of think about as we think about the value of gold and certainly why it recently dropped. It's recently also had a nice rebound, so it's rebounded up a little bit as well. And just from a perspective standpoint, the drop of about 11% or so in one day, and about 16-17% over 2 days, that's Friday and Monday of about a week ago, represent a never-seen-before selling climax in the price history of gold. So this was something that, from a historical basis, was quite significant, something that hadn't been seen for many, many years. Now, on the other hand, throughout the history of gold, there's been periods where gold has dropped substantially as well, not necessarily in such a short period of time, but you can go back to 1976, where gold went through about a 20-month decline. You can go back to February 1985, a period where gold had about a 24-month decline. April of 2001, gold over an 18-month period declined 25% over that period. Go up to 2007 and 2008, and gold declined about 25% over that period as well. And from the top in 2011, this year, through the bottom of Monday a week ago, gold declined about 31%. So while the decline was significant, it's something that has been seen in gold throughout the recent history of gold down through the years. Now,
Tom, we're having a little bit of problems with the phone lines. It's no worries for you. We can still hear what you're saying. Just
okay.
And if you have a backup number or something of that, because we've been having some real problems with the phones recently, particularly when we're talking about financial information, as it turns out.
Okay.
I'm sure it's just coincidence.
Like, oh, yeah. I'll send you my backup number.
Okay, that's a good idea, just in case.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of finances, gold in particular, I was talking with somebody the other day and said that most of the gold is made up. You know, it's not real. It's just paper. And basically, unless you have the gold in your hand, you won't get nothing.
Yeah.
Is that about right? Is there legions of, like, billions of dollars of just fake gold that just doesn't exist out there?
Well, yeah, I think nothing's been truer than what you just said. Unless you hold it in your hand, you don't have it or you don't own it. And, you know, as we talk tonight, we're going to be talking a little bit about the whole gold system. And I think a lot of people are going to be surprised to learn, you know, what kind of makes up the gold system, how gold interests are passed along throughout the system. And so, for example, I think what you just mentioned there is there's, of course, you've got the major bullion banks, and they go to, Fed, and they borrow off of their gold. And then, of course, they sell that gold to other entities, which, of course, then ends up on the stock market. So in many instances, many of your listeners may think that they own gold, but they just really own borrowed gold, and that's all they really have. So we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, the system out there and how exactly gold is transacted.
Go on.
Yeah. I think one thing, as you take a look at the question, why did gold go down? I think it's always good to take a look at, you know, why perhaps, what are the reasons that don't exist why gold went down, if I'm making sense. So, for example, a lot of people are wondering, you know, did something fundamentally change in the U.S. or the global economy, which would have caused gold to drop the way it did? From any evidence that one can see out there, the answer is no. Nothing has changed fundamentally out there. As a matter of fact, some of the evidence to that is, as gold was dropping over that short period of time, we were receiving very negative U.S. and global economic news. And usually a weakening U.S. and global economy would kind of drive investors to gold and to silver as a asset of safety and as a real asset, beyond the fiat currency system that's out there. So, for example, Vinny, as gold was dropping a little over a week ago or so, we were getting manufacturing numbers from different parts of the world in the United States that were weakening. In other words, the industrial output and the manufacturing numbers have gotten weaker, and such information like that was coming out as gold was dropping. Another bit of global economic news that came out was that China's GDP was being revised downward from about an 8% growth down to 7.7% growth. And, of course, you know, China is one of the important economies in the world that drives growth out there. And we were receiving economic news that their numbers, growth numbers, were getting weaker as gold was dropping. We also had an International Monetary Fund report that came out, and it lowered global GDP growth. So that came out right around that time. So the fundamentals that make gold and silver desirable you know, which is as a safety asset to counteract the global economic and fiat currency, you know, weakness, remain intact. You know, nothing changed there. So as you take a look at, you know, reasons for why gold dropped, you have to look to other reasons for that happening. Another bit of evidence is that while gold was selling over that period, there was actually frenzied buying of physical gold and gold and silver coins during that period. A number of headlines that people read out there was, for example, quote, gold buying frenzy continues. China, Japan, and Australia scramble for physical gold. Another headline out there, India's response to the gold sell-off, a massive buying frenzy. And then on April 17th, right as the gold was dropping, U.S. Mint sells a record 63,500 ounces of gold one day. So as the price of gold was dropping, there was a frenzy to buy physical gold. Myself and my associates, we called up our sources. We called up gold dealers, and they confirmed that during that period was that they didn't have enough inventory in for the buyers that were buying the gold, physical gold. So one has to eliminate, you know, that factor, the factor of, well, you know, physical gold buying dried up. That might be a factor to bring the gold price down, but that wasn't happening. And, people were buying more and more physical gold. So, you know, that's not a reason, you know, for, you know, why, you know, gold, you know, went down. Something else which, we've discussed before, Chaplain Williams' first DVD that myself and my associates participated in, and then on the second DVD more recently, we mentioned that. You know, we mentioned that, you know, gold, like other assets, is something that can be manipulated. You know, the powers that be, they've created a system, and they've got the ability to be able to influence that system to their benefit.
All right. Well, that's a good first segment, all in all. We'll be right back with Tom Filer after the break. Caller lines are open, 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525, and you'll be first in the queue. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We like to have fun, and we also like to talk about pretty much anything y'all please. And today we're talking with a financial genius. Is that too strong a word? No, I don't think it is. Tom Filer. Right. So where were we? We're talking about gold, right? So the situation is like this, that the gold price has dropped sharply. Huge amount of people wanting to buy it up at that real low price. And I was wondering, what stand does currency manipulation have to do with this? Because what I've seen with the gold prices is that if the currency gets devalued, gold price goes up. And if the currency gets, contracted and each of the dollars are worth more, the gold price comes down. Anything like that happening?
Well, you know, that's the standard reaction or relationship a lot of times that you know, gold will have to, you know, currencies. And so, yes, that will happen, you know, at times. But times when that doesn't happen, when that will dislocate, and there'll be a close, what they call correlation or similarity between the movement of gold as well as, you know, some currencies at some time. So, you know, investors, gold investors, have to be very careful about simple relationships, which you know, or maybe even at times prevalent relationships. A lot of times those relationships will dislocate. So you have to be very careful about that. In this instance right now, really, you've basically got currencies all across the world. And again, this is another reason to eliminate that gold was going down on fundamental reasons. Everybody's devaluing their currency. I mean, there is a rush all over the world to devalue, their currency. And so as that's going on, the normal relationship, would be that, gold would be strengthening. So that's another, kind of dynamic that, didn't bring down the value of gold. That's an important consideration, to watch, and a very important relationship to watch. But getting back to, what we were talking about before, I mentioned that, gold can be manipulated in either asset out there. One thing some people may not realize is that there's been a record central bank demand for gold since 2010. And this is a trend that we noticed, back then, where central banks became net purchasers of gold in 2010. And this is the first time that they were net purchasers of gold since 1989. There's a report that China alone officially imported about 835 tons of gold just in 2012. China also is said to have imported another 800 tons of gold in the last 3 months. And this is during, the decline in gold price. And we'll get a better indication of some of the gold buying by whom when the World Gold Council comes out with their gold demand report this coming May in about 2 or 3 weeks. So we'll have a better idea of, who's been buying, gold and or selling it, when. But that's an important, factor to understand is that, as institutions like central banks have become net buyers of gold, then through their activities, gold can be moved or manipulated much easier, by a large institution, such as a central bank.
Yeah. Well, is there any kind of agenda there? I mean, because I heard that China has been vigorously hoarding gold while the rest of the world is selling it.
Yes, yeah. And, one thing which I found very interesting, we learned years ago, was that, China is actually one of the largest gold producers, and yet their government requires all the Chinese gold producers to sell the gold to the government. Absolutely. And not only do they hoard gold from within, but China is, buying as much gold from, outside and other global producers as much as they can. So that's something to keep an eye on as, the reserve currency system is going through a very, very dramatic change out there.
Completely interesting factoid of history. How the... way back in the day, how the Chinese managed to find gold under the ground?
I'm sorry?
How the Chinese used to find gold back in the day. They'd look for wild garlic.
Right.
Yeah. Grows in the same areas where the gold's found under the ground. I thought that was intensely interesting.
Yeah. Well, just to kind of diverge a little bit, one thing whenever I hold a piece of gold in my hand, my understanding is that, way back when, I guess billions of years ago, when there was the Big Bang, gold was part of the material of the minerals as part of that. And so, of course, gold, settled in the creation of planets and of course, galaxies. And so whenever I hold a piece of gold in my hand, and wondered, where did this come from? Gold has literally over billions of years traveled, billions and billions of miles, to find its way on Earth and then eventually into our hands. So I always, whenever I hold gold, I kind of have a feeling of wonderment, you know, when I do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say that there's something strange about it. Like, it's different from every other metal that I've ever seen or held. You know, the color is different, the weight is different, apart from tungsten, of course, which is why, incidentally, they found out that a lot of the gold bars are being salted with tungsten, if not just being hollowed out and filled with it, because it's virtually the same chemical weight. But
right.
it's got, like, magical healing properties or something I've heard as well, you know, putting gold flecks in beverages or something of that nature has some great health effect. Like, it has so many different uses. Isn't it even used in the aerospace industry or something like that for the astronauts out in space?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. It serves as not only plating, very strong plating, but also as a conductor as well.
Now, moving on from just the random facts about gold, I'd like you to just, well, basically continue, Tom.
Sure.
Analysis.
Yeah, let me just spend, I think we're maybe coming up for a break, so I'll just kind of get started on this, but maybe just spend a few more minutes on, once again, you know, how institutions and entities can influence gold out there. Again, you know, one of the reasons why we always recommend, you know, owners of gold, especially owners of gold that have a lot of it, and, you know, we work with, you know, with the families and investors who have, you know, 10% of their assets are in gold, some 20, 30, 40. We work with, you know, families and investors who have 60 or 70% of their assets in gold. So, you know, because we know it can be manipulated, you know, we encourage everybody to make sure they have what we call a gold management plan, so they can, you know, manage their gold and, you know, at times, to work to protect their gold, you know, from some of these downsides and some of these periods of manipulation. So that's why I'm spending a little time on, you know, trying to unfold for your audience, you know, how does gold move around the system and who has influence and who is instrumental in moving gold around. And I want to just talk a little bit about the securitization of gold. You know, years and years ago, owners of gold just simply owned physical gold. And you know, among retail investors, it was a relatively small market. But then, you know, going back, I guess, to about 2004 or so, a little bit before that, they came up with a gold and, of course, silver exchange-traded funds, and then, of course, offered them in the stock market. And this really opened up the ownership of gold, or quote-unquote the ownership of gold, to literally just millions upon millions and millions of other investors. A lot of people, you know, believe that that really drew on a lot of supply of gold. And, you know, we've had a nice, you know, 12-13 year run of gold. 12-13 years, gold has you know, gone up significantly over that period of time, and done very, very well. But let's take a look at the securitized aspect of gold. You know, you know, what is that system? You know, who are maybe some instrumental players, you know, in that system of gold? And the one organization that you need to kind of know about is the Spider Gold Trust. And they're the ones who, you know, sponsor GLD, which is the gold ETF, one of the gold ETFs out there. And the Spider, SPDR Gold Trust, was formed in November of 2004. The trust and the sponsor is actually World Gold Trust Services. And interestingly, and I think a lot of people will recognize the organization I'm going to mention now, but they might not have understood or known about the relationship that this organization has, you know, with the Spider Gold Trust and the ETF GLD. A lot of people are very familiar with the World Gold Council. And I just mentioned them a few minutes ago, where the World Gold Council is an organization which I would say, you know, promotes gold. They do a lot of research, and they gather a lot of information on gold and provide that information to investors in gold and, of course, users of gold. And the relationship that they have with the Spider Gold Trust is the Spider Gold Trust is wholly owned by the World Gold Council. So there's a direct relationship between the World Gold Council and the ETF, GLD. And so, you know, that has a that's a very interesting relationship, and you have to kind of bend your mind around that relationship and maybe the influence that you know, gold GLD has on gold and the World Gold Council and vice versa. So that's one thing that's very interesting. Now, staying with, you know, how that system works, how does the Spider Gold Trust work? And, you know, are there entities out there, institutions or entities, that have a large influence in the movement of gold, you know, through the gold ETF GLD? The way the trust is set up is that the trust has designated about 18 equity entities, financial institutions, generally speaking, who are the only entities that may place orders to the Spider Gold. So just kind of imagine this. All the hundreds of millions or billions of dollars that gets traded, you know, in GLD is traded through 18 financial institutions. And institutions that we all recognize, like Citigroup, like the J.P. Morgan Chase, you know, Deutsche Bank, and you know, some of the major ones that most of us would recognize. One of the other institutions is Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs and Company is another one of the institutions through which one of the only 18 financial entities that the Spider Gold Trust trades its gold through. And I'm going to, you know, kind of create a relationship between Goldman Sachs and, you know, some of the influences that Goldman Sachs and other institutions like this can perhaps, and, you know, there's you know, a lot of, you know, research, analysis, supposition to the things that we're discussing tonight. So I'm just trying to, you know, develop some relationships here. The way an order takes place when you buy the GLD ETF, exchange-traded fund, is as an investor, you call up your broker and you put an order in to buy shares of GLD. Your broker will call one of these 18 organizations. These financial institutions are referred to by the Spider Gold Trust as authorized participants. So these financial institutions, about 18 of them, are what's called authorized participants, the only financial institutions through which any orders for GLD will go through. Your broker-dealer will call one of these 18 participants, and let's just use Goldman Sachs. They'll call up Goldman Sachs, and they'll put an order in to buy the shares that you want to buy. Goldman Sachs will then call up the Spider Gold Trust, and Goldman Sachs. Yeah, I hear we have segment break coming up.
You can finish your sentence.
Okay. Yes, so Goldman Sachs will then call up the Spider Trust, and Goldman Sachs will quote unquote purchase gold to the amount that you're ordering, and then will exchange that gold with the Spider Gold Trust.
We'll be right back. Tom Filer is my guest, ladies and gentlemen.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. It's already into the third segment with my special guest, Tom Filer. I don't know what it is about this show, but it just goes by so quickly. Right, Tom, I'm sorry. You were talking about something about Goldman having everybody by the sacks?
Perhaps well put. just to continue, you know, the story, and, you know, my wonderful wife who's listening in has told me to slow down. You know, I tend to get excited and then speak very quickly. You told me, Tom, slow down a little bit. You kindly, in your last show, you know, Vinny asked me about my family and my wife, and I've got a wonderful wife. She's a very, very intelligent, you know, lady, of course, much smarter than I am. And so I'm really blessed, and so I'll try to slow down a little bit. And I know I'm getting into a lot of kind of, you know, wonkish information here, a lot of detail, and so... you know, I apologize to the audience, but I'm trying to kind of set things up so people can understand as best they can, you know, how the gold system works and how certain entities, you know, may have an influence in it. An influence, you know, certainly beyond, you know, Vinny, what your influence and my influence can be on the market. So we were talking about the gold ETF, GLD, the symbol is GLD, and we were creating some relationships here for, you know, how... that system moves the representation of gold. You know, how one, how an individual, everyday American puts an order in for GLD and what system and process that goes through. Because, you know, hundreds of millions and billions of dollars, you know, have over the years gone through GLD. So we're to the point where we know that there's only about 18 institutions through which the Spider Gold Trust, you know, which operates GLD, conveys orders through. An individual investor puts an order through to their broker-dealer. That broker-dealer then calls one of those 18 institutions, puts the order for GLD through that one of those institutions. One of those is, I mentioned a few of them, and one is Goldman Sachs, and I'm going to kind of be coming back to the name Goldman Sachs. With all due respect to Goldman Sachs. And then Goldman Sachs buys, quote-unquote, a representation of gold, which then they call up the Spider Gold Trust, and then an exchange makes place for that representation of gold from Goldman Sachs to Spider Gold Trust, which then takes the gold, you know, from these participating institutions, these authorized participants like Goldman Sachs. They take the gold from them, or the representation of gold, which is usually borrowed, you know, by the participating institution, and then they issue certificates to Goldman Sachs for the shares that are being bought by the average everyday American. Goldman Sachs and those other 18 institutions then communicate that certificate to the broker-dealer, and then the broker-dealer calls up the everyday American who has just bought, let's say, 1,000 shares of. And in between that, of course, these participating institutions, those 18 institutions, are buying a representation of gold. And, of course, a lot of their clients will be owning GLD and some of the other products that are sold by the Gold Trust.
You've heard of the expression clipping the ticket, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is that what's going on here? Because basically what you've just explained to me is that you've got 18 institutions that are authorized to buy representations of gold, i.e. made-up gold, right? Then they go to this big bank, this gold trust, Fighter Gold Trust, and then they issue certificates, which is basically like printing currency, and then the bank calls the buyer originally. So you've got this back and forth, and a whole bunch of ticket clipping along the way. I was also wondering, does the fact that the system is run like this with so many backs and forths with the banks and the other higher institutions, you know, authorities and things of that nature, is that pushing up the price of gold to a margin as well?
Yeah, well, as you kind of mentioned, cooking the ticket, I'll use the phrase, and I'll bring it back to Goldman Sachs, self-fulfilling prophecy. Let me be clear with you and the audience that I'm putting on my conspiracy theory hat here. The best we can do is observe things that happen out there and then, you know, draw whatever reasonable conclusions there are. You know, some conspiracy theories are reasonable and founded on certain, you know, bits of good factual and other types of evidence, and then, you know, certain conspiracy theories don't have as much evidence or as facts as other things. So I'm clearly, you know, putting on my conspiracy theory hat here. But if anybody was noticing things just literally right before the dramatic drop in gold, Goldman Sachs came out with a sentiment or with a report on their sentiment on gold, which was a negative report. You might have heard that. They downgraded, in their opinion, on the performance of gold. And this happened literally hours, you know, before gold dropped dramatically. The interesting thing is some people have concluded, while Goldman Sachs certainly is smart because, they make a call that gold's going to perform weaker, and lo and behold, gold drops dramatically. Now, again, here's a few things to observe. You know, institutions like Goldman Sachs, you know, when they make a call, when they make a report, an analysis, they're very well respected, and their analysis goes throughout the entire world. And I think it's fair to say that Goldman Sachs themselves would like to believe that their analysis and their sentiment is well respected out there in the world.
Even after selling people quote unquote triple A rated derivatives.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Vinny, have a long memory. There's most people out there have a very short memory, and so all those things have already been forgotten. That's absolutely right. And of course, you take a look at many of the other global or the now so-called universal institutions, they did the same thing, but that's been long forgotten, because these institutions, and we've spoken about this before, they're part of the system. They're part of that track of politics to finances to the banking system, to the Fed, and then back to the politicians. These institutions never face what other people would face with regards to the law on what they do, or the political system hasn't made it illegal for them to do things like this.
I would under the assumption that that's because Goldman Sachs is one of the largest campaign contributors in living memory.
I think that would be a very reasonable observation. Absolutely. That's part of the system. That's part of the system. How the system protects, certain other parts of the system. And, they wash each other's hands and wash each other's backs. Absolutely. And that's what's been going on throughout this entire five-year period that we've been going through. I'm diverging a little bit here, but I'll kind of get back to it. But just getting back to Goldman Sachs makes this negative call on gold, and of course, keep in mind they're central. They're in between this whole system of the movement of hundreds of millions, billions of dollars of gold, through GLD and of course, when they get the order from a broker dealer, they have to go out there and they have to buy the gold. So they're central, right in the middle, very influential in the movement of gold out there. They make a negative call. And we subsequently find out, because they announced it just a day or so ago, we find out that they shorted gold during this period when gold was going down. Now, how do we know that? Well, because they just announced a matter of hours ago, a day or so ago, that they've taken their shorts off gold. Now, of course, they're going to give you a lot of reasons for why they shorted gold, but when you short gold, for anybody out there who might be wondering, when you short gold, that means that you have...
It's a bet that the stock market thing is going to go down, and it gives a big payoff if something goes down. The same thing happened on 9/11 with United and American Airlines. Somebody bet big that their stock was going to go down, but apparently the money's not being collected, and Deutsche Bank won't let anybody know who the people who shorted the options were.
That's exactly right.
Here's another element as well. Goldman Sachs is in a dual position to, A1, influence the market of its own accord, and then bet accordingly to what its own prospectus is for the gold price. They literally have a betting on a rigged game model going here.
Right. That's exactly the observation. I'd say the point of the story or the observation in the story. Now, you know, Goldman Sachs is not alone, and there's nothing illegal at this point, you know, about that. But it's just an example of how an institution who is in the middle of the movement of billions of dollars of gold has an opportunity to not only make a call to influence the movement of the gold, but they can actually physically, they went in and shorted the gold, they can actually physically go in and influence Paul Woods.
And they could even make it up and not actually really think that the price of gold is going to go down and actually think that it's going to go up. So they tell a big lie maybe and bet on the downside, knowing that the influence of their words will actually make that bet pay off. Now that's a conspiracy theory for you. Wouldn't it be lovely if these people had open books, if we could actually, review their board meetings and the little things that they say and do? But we can't, because it's a breach of their privacy while they're hatching a conspiracy, unfortunately. It's against the law. We'll be right back after the break.
Everyone's asleep.
Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Have you ever noticed that when you try to have a presentation of some description, you've got two conspiracy theorists talking to each other, it doesn't turn into a presentation, it turns into a conversation that is a tangentary nature. But, you know, look, the world doesn't revolve round and things don't go in a straight line sometimes, because there's a lot of fleshed out areas that need a little bit of attention first before you know where you're actually going to end up in a conclusion based upon large quantities of seemingly irrelevant evidence that come together to form a very, very clear picture indeed. Tom Filer is my guest. Welcome back, sir.
Hi.
Now, you have a website of some description, don't you?
Yes.
Would you?
People can, you know, get information on the work I do through www.essentialsinvesting.com. essentials with an S, investing.com. They can also go to www.wallstreettosmallstreet.com, where there's a lot of articles and information which go through, I think, some of the things that we've been talking about here tonight. That's www.wallstreettosmallstreet.com.
Now, point being behind giving out those websites is for the listener's sake, because, as I said, there's a lot of information that needs to be fleshed out. We simply can't cover in just a two-hour interview. It takes much, much longer. In fact, Tom's done much longer DVD experiences with Pastor Lindsay Williams as well, of course. You can't just squeeze it in the time frame is what I'm saying. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what I'd like to do, Vinny, is give one more example, and I really have to indulge the patience of your audience with one more example of one of the possible reasons why gold went down. And when I say gold, you can think of silver as well, gold and silver. And this is a pretty complicated possibility, but I just want to kind of throw it out there. Once again, just to give the people another example of how this very, very large gold market, or a portion of it, is really goes through a very limited number of entities, and how that can have an influence on the price of gold. But before I do that, if you mentioned Lindsay Williams, I refer to him as Chaplain Lindsay Williams, and Chaplain has a new DVD, if I might mention that, that has come out. And he has, in another DVD packed away just some tremendous information. Your listeners can go to the Prophecy Club, www.prophecy, with a C, P-R-O-P-H-E-C-Y, club.com, to get information on Chaplin's new DVD. This is an update from a more extensive and longer DVD that that was done not too long ago, just really, I'll say, recently as well. And in this DVD, Chaplin covers a subject like Cyprus, the Starling real story. I mean, what really happened in Cyprus. Chaplin talks about the American dollar and how long the dollar, in his opinion, will continue to be viable. He talks on this DVD about health care, how the world's only hope is America. He also has a discussion about Saudi Arabia and some what he feels and what his sources tell him are some dynamics that are going on in Saudi Arabia as well as Iran. And then also another discussion on derivatives. So I just want to encourage people to consider take a look at that DVD. And some updated information from the last more extensive DVD. Well, just to go through just one more example of how the gold system works and how it might have been influenced. Listeners need to understand that the gold market, it's gigantic. People buy gold in every corner of the world today, and they buy it for many different purposes. And yet, the gold market is not, I guess, what you would call a publicly traded market. So there's a lot of things about the transaction of gold that we just don't know. And that's very hard to quantify with information that we have. The World Gold Council provides a lot of good information about the transaction of gold out there. But people have to understand that it's not a very transparent market. And so a lot of things go on through and by a lot of entities out there where it's just really difficult to know exactly what's going on. So, this is why, I kind of refer to it as conspiracy theories, but as a money manager, we deal in data. We deal in data, we deal in information, and we deal in, what I refer to as kind of following the money. If you know what the system is and you follow the money through that system, that can help you to understand what's going on out there. And so, I refer to it as conspiracy theories, but it's really from an investment manager standpoint, we are always looking at, following the money, understanding the system and how the money makes its way through the system, and then drawing suppositions and conclusions from that, which then we take and then which we, of course, apply to our money management and to the management of our clients' money. And, you know, we then come up with what we call risk management strategies, which are based in our various observations and suppositions for what might happen out there, and to have our clients as protected as possible.
Can I interject here? This is not cartel theory, because as you've described, the gold market is controlled by, well, the vast majority of the gold market anyway, controlled by these very few major players who are working in concert to a degree. Is that not a technical definition of a cartel?
Yeah, I guess it would be, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, if you've got a limited number of actors that are transacting or business goes through.
Okay. So it's pretty straightforward. You're dealing with a gold cartel.
Yeah.
Conduct your business accordingly.
Yeah. And the thing that people need to understand is that, you know, systems are created, you know, by entities. Every system out there, you know. I think on that website, Wall Street to Small Street, there's an article there where I describe how the stock market was created. You know, what is, you know, and then who created it. And normally it's reasonable that whoever creates a system normally creates it first and foremost to their benefit. I mean, it'd be silly to create a system that wasn't to your benefit. That would be kind of silly and perhaps stupid to do that. So whoever creates these systems, in one article I described how the stock market was created by whom, and then how the stock market benefits those people who created the system. And it's the same with the gold system out there. There's a system for how gold moves and is transacted. It was, you know, created by somebody. And again, my observation would be whoever created that system, they're going to first and foremost benefit, you know, from that system. So I think people have to keep that, you know, in mind. And that's how kind of you follow the money through this system, understanding how the system works and who it was primarily created to benefit.
So no different from the Federal Reserve System either.
Absolutely. Yeah, and people, that's a very good point. You know, people should just take a little time to understand how the Federal Reserve System was created, who it was created by, and who it is there to serve. And I think a lot of people will be shocked to find out that, you know, out there in you know, the media, the understanding is kind of given out there that the Federal Reserve is there to serve us, the people. The Federal Reserve is there to serve us. They're there to somehow make unemployment low, which they've never been able to do that, and yet the politicians, you know, kind of threw that on there to try to make, I guess, the Fed look a little bit better and to give them social conscience or something. But that's one of the things that they're, you know, one of the responses they're given is to bring unemployment, you know, down. And I'll make a remark about that. And the other thing is to, you know, kind of, to regulate the currency. As well, you know, and supposedly, and you hear this all the time, is to keep the currency strong. That's supposed to, you know, and the Federal Reserve is out there right now, and they're really, you know, presented as the savior of our system, the savior of our lives. They're there to help and to benefit us. But, you know, if you just read, well, who created the Federal Reserve, who serves on it, how is it formed, and what's the purpose of it, you'll find that it's really, they're not there to serve the American people. They really are not. And so I would just encourage people, that's another two-hour show, Vinny, but that's something that people should look into. One last example I'll give, if I might, this probably is maybe one of the most complicated ones of kind of how the gold system works, is something referred to as the gold carry trade. That's a very technical term, but so let me just kind of describe that a little bit. You've got bullion banks out there which hold the gold. And so an entity that is looking to be able to buy gold and then to sell it to somebody else, and we kind of went through that system how it works with GLD, they need to go to a bullion bank and they need to purchase the gold. The bullion banks, they lease, the central bank lease gold to the bullion banks. Okay, so just these are central banks. Remember, I established that since 2010, central banks have become, you know, larger owners of gold out there. So central banks lease gold to these bullion banks.
They lease the gold?
Yes.
Like, you know, you have this gold in your possession for a certain amount of time, like Hong Kong handover type lease?
Instead of, you know, the central banks don't take the physical gold and give it to the bullion banks, but they central banks, they lease gold to the bullion banks that then supply this representation of gold, to other buyers of the gold.
Well, so where's the actual real gold in the other? Does any of these institutions, like, they're all the ones trading the gold and all of that kind of stuff, do any of them actually have any gold at all?
In many cases, they don't. It's just leased. I suppose the system was created that way, and I guess one rationale for that would be that it'd be very difficult to physically move gold as quickly as it's transacted. You see, so this would be one of the rationales where, you know, if an institution buys, you know, millions or hundreds of millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars of gold, and it moves, you know, from the transaction, the order transaction, to then the order fulfillment, you know, it's very difficult to actually physically move all the gold out there. So many, many gold transactions are just electronic, or they're just leased. So the transactions can, the gold representation can move much more quickly out there. So I think, you know, that's one thing that people have to understand about the system, that every time a gold transaction takes place, it doesn't take place from an institution actually taking the physical gold and then putting it in a Brinks, delivery truck and then sending it, to that entity, because, by the time it gets to that entity, they're just fulfilling an order from another entity out there.
Well, is there anybody taking stock of just how much representation of gold is out there versus how much real gold there actually is, allegedly, in these institutions, allegedly being leased? Is there a disconnect? Like, is there 10 times as much fake gold out there as there is real gold, like in a fractional reserve sense of the word? What?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, and I think it goes back to the realization that, you know, the gold market, the entire gold market out there, is not 100% transparent. In other words, it's not a fully publicly traded market. There's a lot of disclosures that just don't take place, and so it's very difficult to know exactly, you know, how gold is moving, where it's moving, by whom it's moving, and how much of it is physical. And when you buy a representation of gold, you know, are you actually owning physical gold, or are you owning, you know, kind of a leasehold of a gold, two times removed? But again, there's a practical aspect of that as well, because, you know, every time a gold transaction takes place, it's probably not physically possible to actually have the gold. And I suppose you could apply it to the currency system as well. Banks, a lot of currency transactions, take place not between, physical dollar bills, but are electronic, transactions.
With those monetary electronic transactions, they literally just make up the amount of money on the screen right there and then, and there's nothing backing it.
Right. Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with the gold. They're literally just typing out numbers on a screen. There's no gold there whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, ideally, every gold transaction has an actual physical gold behind it, but I don't think that's the case. I don't think that's the case out there. And your remark earlier in this conversation that the only way you physically own gold is when you have it in your hands.
So, here's another question then. I think we'll probably have to approach it after the break. How much physical gold is in possession by the general population? And how much gold has actually been traded over the course of these financial trading instruments? I'll be wondering, and it'll be interesting to see, how much of a disparity there really is between people who have real gold
and people who just have it on a piece of paper. We'll be right back.
Bonkers.
In my life ain't what it seems. I wear cock just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest, Tom Filer. His website's essentialsinvesting.com, essentials with an S on the end, and wallstreettosmallstreet.com, and of course DVDs and so on and so forth are available from prophecyclub.com. Now, Tom, I was wondering if you could address my question. How much gold is there currently physically in circulation versus how much gold is being sold? Like, there's so much being dug out of the ground every day. Sure. There's so much being minted and being put into gold bars and such. Right. But.
Yep. Yeah, that's a very good question. And, that's something that I'll have to go through, my research sources to kind of pull up. So that is something that, I can, get my research team to do that and to get that information to you. But those are very good questions. As you know, you're trying to match what's out there with what exists with what's distributed. Hello.
Welcome back, everybody. Apologize about that. Had a little bit of a technical issue there and dropped off. Tom, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay. As I was saying, there's so much gold dug out of the ground every day. So much gold minted every day, and there's so much gold that's currently in holdings in either coin or bar form. Is there a register where you can look just how much gold is currently in existence on the market?
There really isn't. Again, that's the lack of transparency, but, there's some good estimates out there. The World Gold Council is a wonderful source to go to try to get some information like that. So I would encourage people to take a look at some sources like that. But it's a good consideration because, what you're trying to do is you're trying to match up, what gold exists out there and then how much of it has been, transacted.
Well, and the key point here is that you'll probably notice in my estimate that there'll be a massive disparity between how much gold has been sold and how much gold really exists. And I think that might be one agenda behind the lack of transparency, is to conceal from people that fact.
No, it was a little disconcerting to a lot of people who went to a local gold dealer. Now, of course, the larger gold dealers, they had supply on hand, but many of the smaller gold dealers didn't have supply on hand, and so that's been very disconcerting to a lot of people who tried to buy gold.
Well, I was wondering, top 10 scams of the gold industry, and so far we've come up with a number of them, haven't we? It's controlled by a more or less a gold cartel. Much of the gold is much more or less just made up, doesn't freaking exist. And to a large degree, the gold price can be manipulated by any number of insider traders and people who have quote-unquote credibility in the financial industry, like Goldman Sachs.
Sure.
So how much do we really know about the gold industry? Even the amount of information that we've divulged so far in this show, because of the lack of transparency, we honestly just don't know what the realities could be, eh?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. There's large entities who have the same thought or consideration or concern that you do. I think your audience probably knows that Germany is trying to get their gold back from the United States. I guess going back to World War II or thereabouts, since then, the United States has been holding Germany's gold. And shortly before here, gold has asked, they want their gold in their hands. I just saw a report the other day that the Swiss, and I haven't confirmed this report, but a report that says the Swiss are to vote on gold repatriation. And it's a campaign called Save Our Swiss Franc initiative, and it seeks to repatriate its gold and double its gold reserves from 10 to 20%. There's maybe some entities and some people thinking like you are that, I suppose they own gold, but, I'd like to have it in my hands.
This sounds remarkably historic. Because I believe this was how cash first came into existence. Some dude with a gold vault, people didn't like carrying around heavy amounts of gold, and you couldn't do your transactions instantly. Same problem that we've got today. And so a dude holds all the gold in a big thing, and he realizes it's not everybody needs all their gold at the same time to purchase stuff. So he just starts loaning it out to people on pieces of paper, and everybody soon realizes that he's got nothing left in that vault at all of any coin. Yeah. And so when they all come back to get all their gold back, there's nothing.
Yeah.
And what happened to that person in a historical context after everybody found out that he'd been conning them the whole time? Did he get executed? I don't know. I can't remember the story. Mm-hmm. But what kind of a punishment would be fitting for a monumental scam of this magnitude? We could be conceiving in the billions of dollars, even more than that, couldn't we?
Yeah.
I don't know. What does a guy go to jail for snatching an old lady's handbag with $100 in it?
Gets right. Like
15 years or something. So if you're stealing $100 billion, maybe you could go to jail for, I don't know, 7 millennia or something,
Yeah.
You are to serve out the next 7,000 years in cryostasis. And when you return to consciousness, we will have reprogrammed you to being an honest banker, because that's about how long it takes.
Yeah.
Either case. Sorry. I was divulging some really weird stuff there. Anyway, can we get back onto the topic? Because how can people actually protect themselves against this? This is what you're talking about earlier about risk management assessment, right? Now, if the whole system's a scam to a large degree, how exactly do you protect yourself from it?
Well, what I'd like to be able to do is to refer people to a booklet that I wrote called Solutions in Investment and Asset Management. And this is a booklet that any of your audience who would like this booklet, could either contact you or contact me, and I'd be pleased to email them a PDF version of this book. And this booklet has a number of sections on gold, on precious metals. It covers the full array of gold management. The premise here is, we don't have control over everything. We don't have total control over our currencies. We don't have total control over, assets, like gold is, as well as other things. So they can be moved up and down by the powers that be. And so one of the ways in which to protect yourself is to use risk management, methods and means to do that, to have strategies, where, you're not, caught, on the downside when the powers that be are selling from the upside and that type of thing. So this is a booklet which goes into some of those risk management strategies and even strategies with an asset like gold on what you can do to minimize some of the uncertainties and the lack of control that you have, over some of your assets.
Okay. Well, could you give us a few examples, perhaps?
I'm sorry.
Well, let's say I'm sitting around and I've got my a whole stack of Federal Reserve notes. Like I've got $10,000 or something hypothetically,
Right.
And I'm coming to you, and I say, bro, I need to diversify. I need me some gold and some silver. What's that? Right.
Well, the one thing that we've been encouraging, people to do for quite a few years now is to diversify out of paper assets. The orientation by 99.9% of the population, everyday Americans, is you buy paper assets. You buy stocks, you buy bonds, you own mutual funds, you have a 401k, and that's been the orientation, for many, many years. And so we've been encouraging people to diversify into more physical assets, natural resources. And, some of those resources would be gold and silver and other precious metals. There's other metals like platinum and other things. So I think, that's a good start. And I think a lot of your audience have done that. They've begun to diversify from paper assets into more physical assets. But there's also, natural resources. We really believe that if people have an opportunity, and not maybe everybody has an opportunity to do this, is to try to buy some assets that are productive, assets that either provide an income or assets that provide an income and or a resource, a sustenance resource, for you. And what we do is we call this sustenance investing. For example, some people have an opportunity to invest in productive farmland. There's an asset that's real. It can provide an income, to you. You can lease it to a farmer to raise animals and grow food on it. So you can get an income, very similar to owning a house for investment purposes and then renting out and getting an income from that. Or you can, take some of your income, from the sustenance of that asset, whether it be food. There may, come a day in the future where, food is, an asset that you want to have direct access to and you want to own the capability to grow that food. So that's one example. There's other examples where you can actually buy physical grain and physical other types of food, and they can act as an investment. Grains, they appreciate over time. The history of grains, corn, wheat, is they appreciate over time. And so there may come a day where owning these assets are as valuable or perhaps more valuable, even on a practical basis, than owning paper assets in a 401k. People need to take a look at how they can diversify from paper assets into these other types of assets.
Is there still much value or trustworthiness in paper assets these days at all?
Well, all I can say is there's value in paper assets until there isn't.
There's nothing for certain.
Right. There's no certainty out there. As a money manager, we're never in the business of making predictions. Predictions is a very bad investment strategy. So we use methods like risk management, and there's ways to manage the risk of the uncertainties of, what's going to happen with, the stock market. What's going to happen with what could happen with your 401k. What could happen, with assets like gold or silver.
The U.S. government now said that they're basically going to start taking away 401ks or Social Security and all of these other things. All the bankers are just taking them.
Well, there's a bill, there's a proposal in Congress already, created by a senator, which would apparently create a national or a federal government 401k kind of retirement plan. For investors, it would be similar to a 401k, comparable to a 401k. The difference would be apparently is that, this national 401k, so to speak, would invest primarily in U.S. treasuries. And of course, as people kind of follow the money and follow the system, as you take a look at information out there, it just so happens that there's about the same value of 401ks as there is to the national debt. So some people believe that the idea behind this government retirement fund is to encourage people to invest in that. And the way we believe it's going to be done, if it's tried, is to discourage 401k investment. And the way you can discourage 401k or individual retirement account investment is to take away the tax advantages of that. So you take away the tax advantages of those types of investments, and you give that advantage to a national or government system, and people will switch money from the private system into the public system. That's how we believe it will happen, and we believe that's kind of how it's happening with Obamacare, where there's been disincentives to private plans and kind of forced incentives into the public system.
Yeah, and it's my contention that this is not going to just happen in America. This is going to happen everywhere. And before you know it, we'll have a nice, big, loving, socialist world government that controls everything and can do anything with it it likes, including your children and you. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's business. It's business time.
That's what you mean. You mean it's business time. Oh.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about business time. It's the Finney Eastwood Show. And the man who's providing the business time for us tonight is Tom Filer. Welcome back.
Hi.
This is the final segment that we've got here. What are some of the... well, I guess you've had a lot of experience in the sectors of finance and things of that nature. Is there a particular incident that has just shocked you more than anything else that just sort of really stands out in your mind and you go, oh, my freaking God?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of things that has shocked me, but I've got to say that what's the most disappointing and enraging thing, and that's a good question. You're pulling out my emotions here. The most enraging thing really is what's going on for the past 5 years, where you had the American people, the stock market crashed, because the system, juiced up the real estate market and they made millions and billions. They juiced up the real estate market. The Fed's low interest rates, and they juiced up, the stock market, and the stock market crashed. And yet the powers that be made millions and billions of dollars out there. They created a derivatives system and then used these derivatives on local municipalities. When those derivatives didn't work out, these municipalities either, went bankrupt or they owed millions upon millions of dollars in losses on these derivatives. The institutions that did this to these municipalities and these people, they still operate. Nobody's gone to jail. They're making more money today than they made back then when they did this to these municipalities and to these people. Today we've got, and then what happened is, the system worked that we, the people, everyday Americans, bailed out their system. After they crashed it on us, after they crashed the real estate market on us, after they crashed the Wall Street on us, they got their buddies in the government to bail them out. And today we've got 7.7% unemployment, which really means very little. There's 19-20% of people who are either unemployed or underemployed. Our workforce continues to shrink, which hurts our GDP growth and provides fewer jobs for Americans to provide good lives for themselves and their families. We've got low growth out there. We've got a record number of people on food stamps, record number of people on disability, and yet Wall Street is as fat and as rich as can be out there. We've got, you know, the market, which has been juiced up by the powers that be, are at all-time highs right now, and this has all been done on the buck and on the backs of the American people. And to me, that's outrageous. And I just got to just warn people out there that, you know, the system, the powers that be, try to make things seem good. But in my humble assessment and opinion, they're not. People need to keep in mind that the last time the stock market, for example, was at this height, was at these all-time highs, was back in September of 2007. And back then, I remember, you know, the system out there was telling everybody things are great, things are wonderful, because the stock market's at an all-time high. Everybody should be happy and satisfied, you know, out there. And 16 months later, after that all-time high in the stock market, which is where we are right now, we've just gotten back to that level that we were back in September of 2007. But after 2007, after it was presented, everything was great, everything was wonderful. 16 months later, the real estate market had crashed and crushed Americans all across the country. And the stock market was down 50%. So if people think things are going well or things are good right now, they've got to, you know, kind of think a little bit.
I was watching Bloomberg the other day talking about the economy and how it's rebounding, how it's going really good, how certain companies are flourishing.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't stop laughing at these very well-dressed, rather attractive people who have no freaking clue. If they do have a clue, then they're freaking liars. It was intensely amusing to me amidst everybody losing everything that they have. You know, you mentioned this word underemployed. Did underemployment actually exist back in the day? You were either employed or you weren't? Was that how it used to be? And now it doesn't even matter if you got a job and work really hard. You still can't be successful because criminals will just take everything that you've earned.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course, there used to be a day when you went to college, you went to school, you got a skill, you got education, then you're able to get a job kind of commiserate, with your hard work, with your hard study and that type of thing. So I guess you're underemployed when you can't get the type of job that that you're really qualified to get. And so you end up taking something much less, and then you have a hard time, you know, supporting your family. But I've got to say this. I've actually got to say this. There is hope. There are things to do, to be able to better order and prepare your life so that you're much more insulated, you know, from all the vagaries and from all the shenanigans of the system and the powers that be. You know, I very much appreciate being able to spend 2 hours, but as you mentioned, you know, there's, you know, the solutions end of this. I guess I'm a little disappointed in myself that I spent so much time in the evaluation and that type of thing that we didn't get into too many solutions. But the solutions
to
this...
Don't worry, Tom. Bad news sells. Continue.
Okay.
See if we can squeeze in some solutions in the last 3 minutes that we've got.
Yeah. but there are, and there's ways that everyday Americans are dealing with the system out there, and, you know, kind of the unfairness in the system out there. So there is hope, and there's a way to protect and combat some of these things we're talking about.
Mm-mm. I would, there's no political solution that I see forthcoming out of this. You know, there's certain candidates who do want to rein in Wall Street and so forth, but it's not just Wall Street that's the problem. It's also the Fed. It's also the International Monetary Fund and World Bank and moneylenders and all over the factions. It's also this deregulated derivatives market. It's also, I think, Glass-Steagall certainly needs to be put back in place, because it was put in place in the first occasion to prevent massive bubbles from building up and causing, like, the Great Depression, which was the reason why it was put in place in the first place.
Right.
After the massive stock market fumblings going on there. Have we learned? And the general public is simply not aware of this. I think the people up the top who are making a shockingly large amount of copious quantities of billions of dollars know exactly what Glass-Steagall mm-hmm. means.
Yeah.
It means empty pocketbooks, because you can't rob people blind if they've got protection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, there's something that I think would be great to implement. Glass-Steagall. Yep. Mm. Like a dream. I have a dream that one day, down in Manhattan with its vicious bankers. investors clutching their wallets tightly will not be raped again by these derivatives of death. I have a dream.
Oh, yeah. Yep. You've got a little bit of an actor in you, Vinny. I like that.
Yeah, I know. I ate him when I was 12.
Well, you know, if I might, if I could, you know, kindly give my email address out, and anybody who would like this book of solutions in investment and asset management, it does go into some of the solutions. So if anybody would like that, they can email me, and I'll send them a PDF version, you know, through the email. They can email me and request that at the email address, my last name, Filer, Filer, at TIAC.net. That would be Filer, Filer, at TIAC.net. I'd be pleased to get, get a PDF version of this booklet out to anybody who might want to request it.
And also, if you email it to me, I'll pop it up with the archive, so when people are downloading the audio files, they can also download the PDF from the website as well.
Will do. Will do. Appreciate that.
Okay, that'll work. All right, well, that takes us to the end of another good show. Thank you, Tom, for your time. Websites again, ladies and gentlemen, essentialsinvesting.com, wallstreettosmallstreet.com, prophecyclub.com, and the email filer at tiac.net. That's TIAC.net. Thanks for your time, Tom.
It's always my pleasure. Appreciate it, Vinny.
All right. Now, also, I want to reiterate to the listeners as well, we're having our own financial crisis, incidentally, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. A lot of people do need to subscribe to this show in order to just, keep the lights on, the studio lights, that is, and the internet running and things of that nature. So if you are capable of being one of the very, very, very generous supporters of the Vinnie Eastwood Show throughout the years, you can go to the homepage, thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because the most important question is in Eastwood, as in go ahead, make my news. Go there, have a look at the bank account number, if you can make an automatic payment into that monthly, $5 or more, or $1 a month, it matters not. We'll give you some commercial-free archives. There's also PayPal options available there, a once-off donation or a regular one. Anything at this particular point would be very much appreciated, as we're living week to week by the skin of our teeth, flying by the seat of our pants, just like planet Earth. And we'll be back tomorrow with another exciting show and another fabulous guest. Thank you very much for your time, your attention, and your generosity, ladies and gentlemen.